Live from the library, this time on Technology IQ.
Welcome. This is Live from the Library. I am Douglas E. Welch. I am a volunteer here at the library. Been doing classes here for, I figured out about 10 or 11 years, off and on, long before the library was actually rebuilt. Had to wait while it was rebuilt, and then we started again. These seminars are designed to introduce you to some neat things that might be out there, neat new internet things that might be out there, and then basically open it up for question and answer. So whatever questions you might have, keep them ready. Perhaps what I show you tonight will generate a few questions as well. Don't hesitate. We can go really, really simple. And you know, what's simple for some people is not simple for everyone, and I do realize this. And in my regular life as an independent consultant, I deal with that a lot. I set up a computer for a gentleman today who has not used the internet for 10 years. He was on dial-up 10 years ago, wow, had stopped using it, and today we hooked him up with DSL and a brand new computer and the whole nine yards. Wow. So do not hesitate to ask. There is no such thing as a stupid question. That is true. I know everyone says it, but it is certainly true. I like an addition that someone recently said for me, which was, there's no such thing as a stupid question because I've asked them all. So we'll just take that as it stands. We'll see if anyone else chimes in with us here tonight on Ustream. We are live on Ustream TV. And yeah, the neat part is, with any modern day computer, you could possibly do exactly the same thing if you wanted. For example, I will sometimes turn this on if we're having a party at our house, and we have several friends. My parents are back in Ohio. We have several friends who live in Hawaii and elsewhere in the country, and even relatives from Sicily, and they can actually tune in and kind of see the party, at least for a little while. So we often do phone calls between Italy and here to talk to the relatives as well. So just an example of what the power the internet has. Just for those listening and you here, each one of these classes.
Good evening.
We always have to wait for the announcement.
Holding court over in
Maine. Court? Okay, Rita.
And you're welcome to go over there if you're at any level of the internet. We welcome you, and those all the answers. Thank you.
Oh, geez, set me up for failure there, Rita. Knows all the answers. I don't know about that, but we certainly will try. I know I've been doing this a long time because all the librarians are retiring around me. So you know you've been doing something for quite a long time. Anyway, so first of all, if you care to ever listen to a previous seminar, or in some cases watch a previous seminar, you can visit the Technology IQ weblog, and that's available. It's on the flyer. It's at welchwrite.com/techIQ, and that's welchwrite.com/techIQ, and I'll type that into the chat room there. That is my technology blog. I write on technology. I am also a computer consultant by trade, and I also use Technology IQ as the home for these seminars, so that if you want to listen in live like some people are doing tonight, or you would just care to listen to them after the fact, you can do that as well. Any standard computer these days should be able to listen or watch the classes that are available there. Tonight, I have a couple things to just kind of show up front, and these are things that have basically taken place this week. Are you familiar with Google Maps at all? Google's online mapping service?
Nice.
Okay. It's like a MapQuest, yes. It's another one. Right. Everyone says it about MapQuest. I personally haven't had many troubles with MapQuest. I tend to use Google Maps anyway for a variety of reasons. Well, Google Maps, much like MapQuest, has the ability to basically map an address to the screen for you. And then it allows you to view it as a map. You can zoom in, you can zoom out. You can look at a satellite version of the map here. You just click on satellite, and it'll show you the satellite picture showing the area. There we go. And basically, this is the library. You can see I can zoom in on that until we get, oh, I may have gone too far there. Come here, back out a little bit. Come on. Our internet connection is a tad slow tonight. Must have a lot of people in the library using the Wi-Fi. But there's the library. We're sitting kind of right down here in this end of the building. Now, you can also, there's also traffic now available that's laid right over the map, so you can get real-time traffic. The thing I want to show today, though, is something that's been announced for other cities previously, but was just turned on this week for Los Angeles. Now, it's a little spotty, but it just so happens that there are some areas here in Los Angeles that allow us to use this. Now, notice when I clicked on the street view up here in the upper right-hand corner, notice now that I have a little person standing down here. And I can take this person and I can kind of drag him back and forth. I can come over here in front of the library, for example, and drop him. And when I do that, we see a street-level photo of where that person is standing. That is the outside of this library. Now, it's not real time. These photos were taken, I think someone said, around January of last year. But basically, it gives me an ability to move up and down the street. I can click the arrows and slide, go east or west on Moore Park. And I can zoom in, I can zoom out, and I can actually turn all the way around. And if you want, you can even make that full screen. And I can actually make my browser window a little bit bigger here so we can see a little bit more. And there is a kind of a full screen version of that street view. So then if, say, I'm just heading down the street here, I can continue heading down Moore Park as if I was driving down the street. And in fact, to go a little faster, I'm going to grab the little man down here. I'm going to turn off the full view here. I'm going to grab the little man. I'm going to go up here to the corner and say, hey, look at that. There's our handy dandy In-N-Out Burger on the corner there. So these street level maps were taken by vans driving up and down city streets and taking pictures every so many seconds. And then they're arranged in order and tied physically to the map. Yes, ma'am?
So I just go on Google and
maps.google.com.
Maps.google.
Yep, maps.google.
.com.
Oh, okay. And that will take you right to the maps area of Google.
Okay.
Okay. And then you can use, again, the street view is the button at the top here where I can turn on that street view. Now, as I said, coverage is a little bit spotty. You'll notice that I only have street view where there are blue lines on the map. Okay, and the valley especially is pretty spotty. It's basically Ventura Boulevard, Moore Park, Van Nuys, and a few others, and only limited versions. If I zoom out, you'll see more and more of the coverage area that goes here. And as we come, let me go all the way out to kind of the whole city. Come here. You'll start to see there's more. The basin has better coverage, although still kind of spotty.
But it's not real time.
It's not real time. Okay. These photos are all taken. No satellite pictures that we see are ever real time. They're always, theoretically, the military has spy satellites that will show real time video, but those are not available to the individuals like us. These are all taken at a given time. Okay. Now, they could have been taken a few weeks ago or a few days ago. I actually like to fiddle around and say, by what's changed in the picture, about what time it was taken, because when they're made, like they built a parking garage behind our house. Well, I know now that the picture they have right now shows it as an empty, bare lot. So they've started construction, but they hadn't started putting the footings yet. So I know basically what month that was of the year. So I can use that as kind of a little guide to tell me when that photo was taken. You can also see at the bottom down here, sometimes they actually will put kind of, you see a little credit line on there with the copyright at the bottom?
Yes.
That'll sometimes give you a little indication of when that particular photo was taken as well. Anyway, so that's Google Street View, Map Street View. I haven't used it much, although, you know, again, with the coverage being as spotty as it is here, it's also available, I believe, in San Francisco and New York City. And the coverage of Manhattan, if I remember correctly, is quite detailed. So, you know, it's a tighter city, more grid-like, and so they were able just to really map it up pretty well. So that is Google Street Maps. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier before we got started about your Macintosh, your old Performer Macintosh. Well, it so happens that this week, Apple actually announced their latest version of their iMac computers. So if you were thinking about buying a Mac and you were waiting until the next models came out, the iMacs are quite nice. They are speedy. They are large. I think the smallest one you can get now is 20 inches. They have a slightly changed design to make them a little more appealing, look a little sharper, and they, as I said, have some phenomenally fast processors in them. I highly recommend, if you're ever thinking about looking at Apple products, you have a great resource available to you, and that is right up the street here at Fashion Square. Hi, Daniel. I see you in the chat room. Nice to see you. Hello. And the stores have them in stock, Daniel says. it's a great resource for you. You can go in and lay hands. They will let you play for hours in there. They will answer all your questions.
Fashion Square.
Fashion Square, second floor, towards the Bloomingdale end, towards the west end.
Okay.
It's one of the smaller Apple stores. It says, and as I talk, I see a man carrying his iPod shuffle around his neck. It is a smaller one of the stores, but they have everything you'd want to see there. Daniel says he was actually looking at them this morning. So, I think they start at. You can actually price out the whole thing right here on the website if you wished. If we go to the store, it actually gives us the starting points. Now, I will say, depending on how much memory they have in them, you may need to add memory and something like that. So the base price may not be exactly what you pay, but it will give you some idea. Again, though, if you go to the store and just go through, you can actually price out. The price you pay online is basically going to be the price you pay in the store. The Apple is a single manufacturer for these. So the new iMac starts at $1,199. And you see their laptops and their higher-end computers there as well, and all the iPods. And the iPhone! Oh, my goodness. I've set up three iPhones.
You want a Mac? You owned one before?
He has a really old Performer.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're... Yeah, Daniel says the Mac Minis are nice. And actually, that's actually what I have. I have a Mac Mini, and if you look at it, where is it at? Is it on the store screen here? There it is. See, that's a little Mac Mini right there. It is really that small. It's a size... It's that big. I used it in that case. It was great for me because I had an older desktop unit like this big Mac Pro here that I was replacing. And so I kept my monitor, I kept my keyboard, I kept everything else. All I did was hooked up the new Mac Mini. Apple has the thing that will pull everything across from your old Mac. I took the old machine out and I went back to work. And it was phenomenally fast and phenomenally easy. The Mac Minis did get upgraded this week, Daniel reminds me. So, just wanted to let you know about the new Macs if you were waiting. And it is sometimes good to listen to when Apple's going to be announcing stuff. Like January every year is a big Macworld conference in San Francisco, and they always announce new products at Macworld. So if you're getting a new computer, many of us will pause a little bit around January timeframe, like at Christmas. You don't really want to buy for Christmas with Macs. We'll wait a little bit just to see what comes out new in January, because that is one of their big... And there's another big one in... There's the Worldwide Developer Conference. I can't remember when it is. Daniel, when's the Worldwide Developer Conference? Can you put that in the chat? Because I can never remember when that is. I want to say June or May or something like that. But anyway. So if you're interested in Mac at all, again, you can go check things out there. Again, go to the store. It's a great idea. As you might notice, though, I'm using a Windows Vista laptop to do my presentation tonight. My traveling machine, my laptop, is a Vista machine. It's June or July, June 11th through the 15th, Daniel says, is when that other time frame is for new announcements. I have many clients who use Windows. I'm a Mac person myself, but I support many, many, many Windows users who are starting to get the new version of Windows, and so therefore I needed a machine I could use to support them in this new operating system called Vista. So it just behooved me that I needed a new laptop anyway, and so I got that in the other platform. I used it for 2 weeks. We were gone at a summer film institute I mentioned last week. In July, we were gone for 2 weeks, and I used this as my exclusive machine, and actually it did very well. I was really surprised. It didn't really give me any cantankerous problems like I was a little bit afraid of, because it is new, it's a new operating system, and you're never quite sure what's going to happen when you really stress it, which I don't normally do. Daniel says Vista has worked well for him as well. Okay.
And they do sell, I think the refurb is great.
Refurb units. You can often go to the store. Factory refurb or refurbished units are units that, for some reason, never left the factory. They were discovered with a flaw before they left the factory. They were then put back into the cycle. That was repaired. Whatever was flawed was repaired, but they cannot sell them as new.
and you can pick them up for significant discounts. And you can look at the Apple Store. I know there's always a bunch of refurbs, usually under a little table kind of by the back. There's a bunch of refurb stuff back there. I have bought refurbished computers from other manufacturers, and they have served me well. It is a way, if you're willing to take a little bit of a risk, it is a way to save a few, in some cases a few $100 off of the price of a full-blown, brand-new, out-of-the-box computer. And that's true for both Macs and other computers as well. One other thing I wanted to show today was something that I've been doing in my life, and this is something that I want to encourage you to think about doing as well. The fact is, every computer released today has the ability to capture and edit video. Now, something that used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in an edit suite and ten people now can basically be done with your standard handheld camcorder and your computer. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because now also, not only can you create these products, you can actually share them and distribute them with people all over the world very, very easily. Okay, as you see, like we're doing tonight, we're doing the live Ustream. It's not recording. I stopped it. Forgot to hit the recording for the video, so now it's recording. Ustream allows us to actually record whatever I'm streaming out live and then save it and present it later. One of the things I wanted to show you was something I did recently, which is we went on over the internet through some various discussion groups that I'm a member of. We set up a photo walk. And a photo walk is just where photographers get together and walk a certain area of town, usually something that has, that hopefully will present a lot of interesting things to take photos of, and we just walk around taking photos of whatever we see. And it's through the interaction with other photographers and seeing, oh, what's he taking? Oh, how's he taking that shot? You learn from each other in by watching each other do it. And so what we did is we went down to the Santa Monica Promenade, met at 3rd Street Promenade outside the Apple Store, only because it's a prominent location there. And then we walked to Santa Monica. We stayed for about 2 hours, but the whole photo walk went for 4 to 5 hours, I think. They hung out till after dark so they could get some shots of the pier at night and stuff like that. So what I did when I was there, not only taking photographs, I also took a little video. And I didn't take much. I just wanted to give people a flavor of the event so they could see, well, this is what we did. And here's the people who were there and stuff like that. Now, you'll have to forgive the kind of herky-jerky nature of the video, where, again, the internet connection is a little bit stressed tonight. It usually is at this time of night, unfortunately. But if you play this is on my website. Yeah, it's not normally so framed like this, but I put this all together on my Mac. The software also comes with a PC that allows you to do it as well, which basically allows you to take video in, different scenes that you took, trim the scenes up, and then lay them in one after the other. You can dissolve between them. You can put effects. You can, you know, swing them in and out, and whatever you want to do there. We're going to let this load a little bit, and then I'll see if I can go back a little bit and play it and see if it'll actually play nicely for us. It's a handheld camcorder, which you can then plug into your computer, and then using these programs that come with the Mac or the PC, you can actually bring the video in and then lay it out and edit it. And then the little music is some music I have. It's a royalty-free music that I can use in any of my productions. I laid that in underneath it. And this is not going to play very well, but I wanted to at least give you the idea of kind of. We'll pause that and see if it loads any better. But just to show you that, then you can easily, in this case, I have a website, so I can, through this video, once I finished, it was uploaded to a video sharing site, in this case called Blip TV. Blip TV, then, it takes my video and it lets me put descriptions and keywords, and it puts it in their system. But then the nice thing it allows me to do is it then gives me a little piece of code, a little piece of text that I can cut and paste into my website. And automatically, the video appears on my website as part of my blog, in this case, with a one-click button where people can just click on it and play the video. So, not sure why it's being so jerky. It's usually not that jerky. I expect it to stutter, but I didn't expect it to be kind of clack, 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 clack. So basically, by not only am I sharing it through Blip TV to anybody who finds it on that site, it's also on my website so people can watch it directly from there. And what I did is I shared the address for this video with all my fellow photo walkers so they could come and take a look at it and see themselves and see stuff like that. The other thing I was able to do, of course, is take the photos that I took. on the photo walk and shared them using two separate photo sharing sites. The one I normally use is called Flickr.com, F-L-I-C-K-R.com, and it allows me to upload my photos, tag them with various tags, which are basically descriptive words. And one of the descriptive words you'll see there is called Photo Walk 080407. We agreed that everyone at the photo walk would upload their photos to these photo sharing sites and then tag them with that particular phrase so that any of us can monitor any photos that get put on the site with that tag and automatically see all the other pictures that other people have uploaded. Even if we have no idea who they were, their name, or anything, all we're looking for is that tag. And so if they tag them properly, then we can see all the photos. For example, if I click on that tag, it's going to show me not my photos, it's going to show me all the photos with that tag. Hopefully. Come on. Now there's another site called Zoomer. And in fact, one of the people on the photo walk with us was the CEO of that company. And it's Zoomer. Three O's. Zoomer. Zoomer.com. Oh, come on, get the period in there. .com. And I uploaded many of these photos there. So you're seeing my photos in here, and then you also see if you went through the... actually, I think I'm only showing my photos tagged with that. Yeah, see all public photos tagged with Photo Walk. So if I click on that one, that'll show me all the photos in Flickr that have that tag. And now we're seeing the other people's photos here start to come up. It's very funny because you're looking through other people's photos and you see photos of you. Because yeah. We were taking photos of each other as we were walking along and stuff like that. So all of a sudden you're just like, hey, that's me. This was later in the walk, I can tell, because we did not get down to Muscle Beach. The rest of the crew did. Let me see here. If you look, I think in that photo, let's see. Let's look at this photo here, if I remember correctly. Click, click, click. There I am. That yellow shirt right there is me. I was wearing my bright yellow Hawaiian shirt. When we're out with the family, we tend to wear bright colors. So I have a 9-year-old son, and it's great to have him like in a red or a bright yellow shirt. Because like, where is he at? Oh, there he is. Okay. Yeah. So we just see we can zoom in the photos. We can look at him. We can share these photos. There I am right there. We can share these photos on our blogs. We can point to these photos and say, hey, guys, there's a great picture we took on Photo Walk. Go check that out. Again, it's a way of taking the media that normally would be statically in an album somewhere, you know, that maybe you brought out once every couple months to share with friends or something. Now you're sharing it with not only with your friends all over the world, but also with anyone who else who has an interest in that thing. For example, I write a gardening column as well, a gardening blog, and I actually watch on Flickr a couple of gardening photo groups. It's one's called Gardening for Fun, and this is a group where people can take their Flickr photos and say, oh, this is, I'm going to send that to the group as well. And so I can see everything posted there that is the people put in that, and it's beautiful, you know, flower pictures and garden pictures, and oftentimes I'll pull something out of there and post it on my blog and say, hey guys, you got to go check this out. There's a really neat shot of this garden or this flower or whatever. So you end up sharing things with people who are literally all over the world. I have spoken with people online from Sweden, Brazil, China, all over the world, seriously. My podcast, my audio and video podcasts that I do, which are like radio and television shows, they have been heard on every continent in the world, including Antarctica. So I actually, there was a project to, they wanted to, a scientific project wanted to run a, radio station during their scientific project, during their time in Antarctica. Well, their internet connection on there was not fast enough to actually download audio while they were down there. So they said, send a CD to this location. This is where the ship is leaving from, the supply ship. Send it here and we'll put it on the supply ship so we have a stack of stuff to play the whole time we're there. And so I burned a CD along with a bunch of other podcasters and we sent them to, in this case, South Africa to catch the boat before the boat headed off to Antarctica for the summer. Basically at that time when I sent that. Daniel's very nice. He also says the new iPhoto 8. iPhoto and iLife are products for the Macintosh. Apple's integrated photo management, audio and video management, and a couple of other programs including a spreadsheet and a word processor and various other things, and website editor also were upgraded during this last this announcement this week as well. And they have the new iPhoto on the Mac actually has the ability to take your photos and with basically one or two button clicks upload an entire photo gallery to the web of your own on your own website instead of using Flickr or something like that. I like Flickr from the standpoint that it is more of a shared environment. And therefore, I think more people see your photos. If you're interested in sharing your photos with others or you're doing group things, I like it because everyone can easily share their photos just by simply tagging it. And I think that's definitely a very nice feature.
How do you make it private? Because I just opened up the account.
You can make it private. When you upload it, you get the option, when you upload a photo, you get the option of friends, family, private, public.
Okay.
So if you mark it private, with neither friends or family checked, then people have to have the password to access it. If instead you mark it private and then put the friends check or family check, then anyone you have marked, any other Flickr user you've marked as family, could see it without any further, they don't need a password or anything. It just knows you've said that person can get in, and so on. You can get fairly granular with that.
Can I go back in and change them to private?
Yes. Yes, you can edit each photo. You can go to the photos. If I were to go to my photo, I can go to basically each photo, or I can actually use the organize function to take a group of them, and I should be, you should be able to change that setting. Yeah, right here it says, this photo is public, change. And I can click that, and one photo, or if I use the organize function at the top, I can take a whole group and change them all kind of with one fell swoop. Okay. And finally, don't want to go too long tonight, but finally, and unfortunately, I'm sure these videos are probably going to hiccup a little bit on us too, but we will try it anyway. I'm often faced with people who, when confronted with YouTube or other video sharing sites, their first reaction is, oh, it's all garbage out there. There's nothing good out there. And the fact is, there is lots of good stuff out there. The difference is, even someone my own age, we've grown up with the feeling that entertainment was something given to us. The networks decided what was good. They made the shows, and they gave them to us. The radio stations decided what music was worth listening to. They made the shows, and we listened to it. Nowadays, that's entirely turned around. Nowadays, the whole point is we and our preferences, through various filtering and searches and other things, can go out and find entertainment which does interest us. Because we all have unique interests. The man I was dealing with today, he works for the LA Zoo, and he's interested in Colobus monkeys of Africa. And so we went into YouTube and started searching, and then tons of videos on the Colobus monkey in Africa, okay? Something very specific to him. So you'll hear people say, oh, it's just garbage, just kids messing about or doing stupid stuff or blah, blah. And the fact is, there is that out there. Because when you open up any resource, you're going to have a certain level of that. But the fact is, dig just a little bit under the surface, and you're going to find some really neat stuff. And so just as a test of this today, the experience with this gentleman today really triggered me to want to talk about this tonight. And I'm going to adjust my volume a little bit. The thing that I did is I went in and there's been a couple of YouTube videos that I really like. My son and I really enjoy watching. And let me see if I can go here. I need to find my favorites. I favorited a few things. Here we go. I favorited a few videos on YouTube. Basically, there's a way on YouTube to say, hey, I like these a lot. One of these videos is a series of Rube Goldberg machines. I don't know if you're familiar with that. These come from a Japanese television show, and they're like either the opening or the closing for the show. And they're dramatic Rube Goldberg devices. I'm going to blow that up for you here. My son we've seen these videos over and over. We'll sit and watch the whole thing again just because they're so, oh, that's interesting how they did that little tricky thing. And like, he loves the fact that a little cup comes out of the big cup there, you know, and then it trips that and it goes across the books and then down and then onto the rail and the, you know, clips the next one and more books. I mean, they're just phenomenal. This is just so fun to watch and try to figure out, how did they do that? No, I'm sorry. I find something like this a lot more entertaining than Fear Factor, okay? Okay? I mean, I have a prejudice against reality shows, but still, this is so much more entertaining. And to me, it's something I can share with my son and not worry about it and enjoy it together. And so... They all ended with this little tag, which is for the show, I'm assuming. And here's another one. And it just goes on for like 14 minutes of these. And the fact is, there's tons of videos like this out there now, because people have seen these, and they've also, people have been creating Rube Goldberg devices for years, and including college competitions and other things. And you can actually find other videos. In fact, there's one that I enjoyed, and you'll have to forgive the video quality. It's a little shaky, but it's an interesting twist on it. Except I didn't favorite it, so I got to go back to where I was. Go back to here, and I should see it. Come here. Well, like Mythbusters, from the end of one of their shows, for the Christmas show, they did a huge Rube Goldberg system. But the one I wanted to show you, let's see if I can find it here. Where's it at? Oh, I bookmarked everything else. Goldberg. But it's kind of the antithesis. It takes something that's considered mechanical and, you know, and mechanistic, and instead they did it all with trees and rocks. Trees, rocks, and ropes. Mm. Same concept, same idea, one thing triggering another, but all done just with natural materials out in the forest. I like the tipping rocks. I think they're like, oh, don't stall now. The rocks tip and then hit the other one, and it hits the other one, and like this. There we go. Well, the sound it makes too. The pile of rocks going across the ground. This is a big fan they made out of leaves. Oh. And a rope is unwinding. A rock is hanging. It was unwinding it to make it spin. It hits another rock, and so on and so forth. Forgive the the stuttering of the video. But again,
amazing.
So entertaining.
Good.
I mean, clever. And the point is, stuff like this exists out there. Something I like to do after we do an event, we go somewhere. I have a mailing list which is called Welch Events, which is basically events, family-friendly, usually free events that I find interesting, and some which I would like to go to, and I try to go to as many as I can because they're something I really enjoy. So one of the things I do is I try to do a little recap video. If I shoot video at the event, I go out and I shoot a little video of it, of what we did there, what it was like being there, kind of, again, like the photo walk, just a feeling of what it was like to be there. This is at the Slim Gauge Grilled Model Train Club in Pasadena. They hold an open house twice a year. It's a 2,500 square foot layout that you can go. You can't run the trains, but you can walk all through the layouts and talk with the guys and see all sorts of neat stuff. Again, shot with my home camcorder. There'll be a URL at the end. And if you're interested, I can give you, if you actually go to YouTube and search on D.E. Welch, that will get you to all of my videos. Oh. That you're not, and you might even be able to see my favorites that way too, the three I favorited in there. But again, wonderful little things to have playing. I mean, imagine like having a little party and just having this instead of Fear Factor. I hate to bang on that, but or how to, you know, Millionaire or something on the TV. Having just a series of these playing on the TV. But the fact is, you can actually get these to where they will play on your TV in various ways and stuff like that. You're not limited less and less to the TV. In fact, on the iPhone now, you can actually watch videos like this on the iPhone, directly on the iPhone. So that's, again, just an example of the type of stuff that's out there, what I consider, you know, if I don't overstate my own abilities, fun stuff to watch that's rather interesting. And totally different from the stuff you're going to see on television. The thing the internet provides you, and the reason you need to go out and find this stuff for yourself is, again, we all have such narrow interests. Some people are interested. I've found over 15 podcasts on knitting on the internet, okay? Any interest you have, no matter how narrow, the fact is, thousands of people across the country and across the world are going to have the same interest. And you can go out and reach out and start to learn from them and communicate with them and share videos with them. This was the Living History Day at the Los Encinos State Historic Park up in Encino. They do this once a month. They dress in costume. They have various old-fashioned games for the kids to play. They have a blacksmith who comes. He's not always there, but the Los Osos Adobe, which is this long building here, just recently reopened after a full refurbishment after the Northridge earthquake. How many years has it been since that? The big house you saw almost totally collapsed, and it was repaired first. What I did here is actually recorded these musicians singing this song, playing this song, and then I used that as my soundtrack under my video. Again, just to give you a feeling of what it's like. Of course, this one's playing beautifully straight through. There's the blacksmith there. Ventura Boulevard, just before Balboa, between Balboa and, I can't remember the other street. I think between Balboa and Encino, I think is probably where it would be. The El Torito used to be my landmark there, but it's not there anymore. There's an El Torito right before, you know, like a couple blocks before you get to Balboa, or used to be. And there's a side street there, but I don't remember what the name is. Yes, it's right. It basically, if you go down Balboa and then turn off of Balboa onto Moore Park, going eastbound, you drive by the back end of the entrance to the park, the entrance, and then.
So it's east of Balboa.
It's east of Balboa. Yes.
East of Balboa.
Yes, there's a Smart and Final there, and Chili My Soul is in there. It's right next to that. It's right next to Chili My Soul. All right, next to that plaza. If there's parking available on Moore Park, and there's another entrance there where you can actually park on the street and come in that way. It is only open certain days of the week, but I think it's open at least 4 days a week, and there's a duck pond there. That was one of the original ranchos in the San Fernando Valley. It was the stopping point between Los Angeles and Ventura on El Camino Real. So, so it had one of the only natural springs, prominent natural springs along that route. This was Easter. We were there. Every Easter, they have a huge Easter egg hunt for the kids, and it's very fun. They have different levels, so the younger kids can be with themselves, and the older kids can be, you know, with kids more their age. But again, why don't you do something like this? Why don't you share, something that you've done? I have a video of a Japanese garden over in Glendale that I took. I have a art walk that we did where they had this fire-belching organ. me and my son setting up a bird feeder, fixing some gardening stuff in my backyard, and even some videos about how to do stuff on your computer.
Which photo do you give them to? What do you give them to upload?
MPEG-4. Don't worry about it. You don't need to know.
Well, I don't have a camera.
Of course, the camera. You said nothing stupid. Like, is YouTube, let's say you wanted to, you said knitting. Wanted to look at something about knitting. Would you just put knitting on your screen, or would you have to go to YouTube? Basically,
you're going to search in these different video sites or on Google. You will put in, for example, here on YouTube, I'm going to go to the search box up there. I'm going to type in knitting. I might hit search. See what comes up. Continental knitting demo, Lego knitting machine, backwards knitting stitch, knitting casting on. Knitting continental ambidextrously. Innovations, a knitting machine. Knitting,
YouTube,
this is all on YouTube. This is just on YouTube.
Right.
And there are 10 more, 20 more services like that out there.
Yeah.
So you just
have to put knitting. You don't have to put YouTube, right?
What happens is you go to the site, and then on that site you do a search. And it will show you everything it knows about knitting on that site.
Yeah.
And you could also go to Google and kind of Google. You can go to Google and say knitting space video. And you could also kind of search more sites at once by using Google. Yeah.
So you go on knitting space?
For example, say you were looking at examples of casting on. I could say knitting space, casting space on. And I would only have found the videos that were about casting on.
Okay.
So. You can get, the more words you add, the more specific your search results get.
Right.
And so that's a way of narrowing it down. Well, now that I've talked for 40 minutes here, there's one more video I want to show you, because I have it favorited here. But and this is something that not only can you view online, you can actually go and take this tour. And this is Charlie Finis's Disneyland tour of Los Angeles. This is a gentleman who does these tours downtown and compares downtown Los Angeles with the lands of Disneyland. Looks like our internet connection got better because these are playing very well now.
Gary? Hello, Gary.
And I had heard about these tours, and now after watching this video, it's like, oh, I gotta go on this.
Our marathon is the Disneyland tour of downtown Los Angeles, where I show you the staggering similarities between downtown LA and Disneyland. I don't say we have one Disneyland, we have two.
Larry, this is Gary. Gary, this is Larry. Larry, meet Gary.
We're going to see the Fantasyland, the Adventureland, the Tomorrowland, and the Frontierland, and the Main Street USA of downtown Los Angeles, and we're gonna have a rip-roaring good time.
I found this simply by typing in Los Angeles into YouTube. I wanted to see what LA stuff was out there. And this is one of the things that came up. So again, is there garbage out there? Yeah. Is there some really neat stuff out there? Yeah. Well, at that point, let me go ahead and say thank you very much. And if you guys have any questions, we can start answering, you know, any more questions you might have tonight.
If you wanted to find this is more... background of your family.
Yes.
So would you just put Google and your name?
Yes, you can actually do it. And in fact, what you'll find is Google is kind of the first place to start, because Google will turn up all sorts of stuff, most of which probably isn't what you're looking for. But what it will also turn up is you'll start to see mentions of repositories of information that are what you're interested in. For example, that are what you're interested in. For example, I was doing a genealogy search, and I just started searching on names, and then I realized, oh, what's this link I'm finding here? Ooh, what's this Roots Web thing I'm finding? What's this? And I started clicking into links for Roots Web, and then it's like, oh, this is a genealogy site with all sorts of information all over the place. Cool. And then I started digging down in their site, because I used Google to kind of find me the big resources out there, and then I went to each of those resources and started really digging in. So RootsWeb is one. RootsWeb has a thing where individual counties, like the historical societies, the genealogical societies, individual counties, can actually set up their own RootsWeb site for that county, where they go out and they will look up tombstones for you and put all their research up online. And so you use Google to kind of find the big places to start. Like, for example, say you would look my name up, Douglas Welch, Huron County, Ohio. Okay, my family's been in Huron County since, as far as I know, about the 1870s at least, and probably before that. Always in the same county and within about three townships of one another. And the townships are so small, I've actually been able to go back through and hand look at every record in the census record and find my family, because it's so small. It's 40 pages. I just keep looking until I find their names, basically. That's just one site that I know off the top of my head. There's a new site, the one that I've highlighted here, see if I got the URL right here, called genie.com, I think. Genie.com is a brand new site, just got announced, and it's the site where you can actually put in your genealogy, and other people can put it in genealogy, and it will start to establish connections between you. Now, there are some limitations for serious genealogists. There's some severe limitations to the system, but if you're just getting started, it might be an interesting place to check out. Used to be you had to have programs on your computer to do this, for example. Now you can do it all through here. So here's basically my immediate family. My mother, my father, my three sisters, and my brother. Okay? Well, I've put this information in already. Now, if someone decided they were looking for someone named Douglas Welch, they could start to look at my genealogy and they could even send me a message and say, hey, did you have a Dudley Welch in your family? And I can go, why, yes, I do. That's my grandfather. Why? Do you have someone who connects to Dudley? And you could start to connect up your family trees that way. It's brand new. Just getting started, but might be interesting to play around with.
But none of these things cost anything.
This does not cost anything. Now, funny you should ask. There is a site that a lot of big time genealogists use. It is a pay site, but it is, for example, the site that my friend allowed me to go in and look at census records online. The actual, you know, scans of the books. And that is called Ancestry.com. and that is a pay site. There are some free resources there as well, but for a fee, a monthly fee, you gain access to the actual photostats of the census books and indexes and stuff like that. The only trouble I found with the indexing was that for whatever reason, every time they entered my family's name, it was misspelled in horrible, misshapen ways. I mean, not even close. Oh. Welch became Declet, D-E-C-L-E-T at some point. Ooh. Well, part of that's the handwriting. You know, part of that's the handwriting, and I get that. But you can see I put in like back to my great-grandfather on my father's side, just playing around with this. So there's, you know, my family tree, tracing my father back to, my mother's side has been traced all the way back to 1780s Quebec through another member of her family. And we actually, my friend is also Quebecois from far back. One of her relatives is a La Riviere, and we actually found we have ancestors in common, both famous and not famous.
Oh my God.
We are both related to Madonna.
You and
your
wife.
Oh my God.
Me and my friend's wife.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Wow. She's a heavy duty genealogist. She's really interested in it. So she does a lot of research. And the fact is, Quebec, the founders of Quebec, the French founders of Quebec, was a very, very small group. Maybe 100 people. Let me type in this to Daniel here. Genie.com, Daniel. So the fact is, if you're Quebecois, you're related to everybody else who traces back to Quebec of that period, because it was a very, very small set of settlers. And the fact is, my mother's maiden name is Farmer, but the actual family name I found out through my other relative doing this research is Terrien, which means worker of the land. Aww. They were Quebec, they were Quebecois. They basically, the way I described it, they basically stepped across the northern border into upstate New York and landed there, changed the name to Farmer, anglicized it. And so I'm not related to any of the English farmers, the traditional occupational surnames that you see, Farmer and Smith and Cooper. I'm not related to any of those farmers at all, because it was actually a French name to begin with. But what that means is I wondered why my grandfather, my mother's side, his name was Claude. And Claude's a very uncommon name. Where I come from. And then I go looking at the records, and all the male descendants were either Claude Charles or Charles Claude. Bing, bing, bing. Family names that came down for generations. My son is actually named Joseph Claude, because he's named for his two grandfathers, Giuseppe Santi Italiano and Claude Charles Farmer. So my joke with my wife's family is they've gone from Giuseppe Santi Italiano to Joe Welch in three generations. So, you know, well, I just washed out all the ethnicity right in one fell swoop there. But this is genie.com again. Definitely worth playing around with. And you can actually, you can tell it to print from here and it will export. The one thing that a lot of people want them to add is this thing called a GEDCOM file. A GEDCOM file is like a Word file or Excel file. It's a standard file for sharing genealogical information. It's a text file that can be passed through any computer, any system, because it's just a text file listed in a certain way. And then I could give you my family tree. You could suck that into your program and immediately see if there were any matchups. Serious genealogists use GEDCOM files to share this information. And they were hoping that that'd be one of the first things they added to Genie would be having. Because imagine if you could, the ability to import all these GEDCOM files. People could certainly just amazingly populate their family trees online and start to develop things right here in Genie.com. So. The other site I was talking about was Ancestry.com. That's the pay site. And you can go check that out as well. That has lots of great resources, although it is paid. But it saves you a trip to the National Archives. Which I've been to. Any other questions tonight?
This is
really... Wow, have I given you some food for thought there? I mean, that's my goal every week is to give you a little bit of food for thought, hopefully encourage you to put a toe in the water and kind of say, you know, what's that out there? What's going on out there? I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
So we can come back when we want?
Other sites other than Flickr?
Yeah, in fact, funny, yeah, I'm just going to go over to Zoomer.com. Yeah. There's Yahoo Photos, too. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. Yahoo Photos is closing because they bought Flickr. That's right. So we'll try to go to Zoomer.com here and see what we can see. I will sign in as me. Free account. The one benefit the Zoomer has is they have unlimited uploads. You can upload as many photos as you want. Flickr does have a monthly limit for their free accounts. If you have a Flickr Pro account, that limit is removed, I believe. But Zoomer right now Zoomer has some interesting features of its own. I hadn't played around with it much, but they have a neat thing where people can tag a photo and say, "This is Doug," and I will start to see things where there's an area called Photos of Me, where I can actually click on it and it'll show me all the photos of me that other people have taken and marked me as a, since I'm a Zoomer user, I can just put in my Zoomer username and mark that photo as having me in it and even draw a picture around it. How do I get there? I'm still learning Zoomer. You'll have to forgive me a little bit here. But there's, where is that? Your photos, everyone's, I wonder, can't remember quite how to get to that feature. But you'll see it's similar to Flickr in a lot of ways.
Can you upload a lot of pictures at the same time?
Zoomer doesn't have, one of the benefits it doesn't have that Flickr does have, Flickr has an external program that you can download called the Flickr Uploader. That you can actually dump, like I just uploaded 45 pictures. Grabbed them, went swap, said upload, and it goes, and it uploads them for me. Zoomer is still a bit limited in the latest upgrade, they lost their automatic upload, third-party upload feature, and so you do have to do it in a little smaller way. You can select a group of, actually, I take that back, you can, although there's not a separate application, you can select a group of photos, and then it will upload a group, so it's just, it does it through the web instead of through a separate application.
Okay.
That's a limitation.
And if you want to make photos from the...
Both Zoomer and Flickr have links to photo printing sites where you can say, take these photos and print them out as real photos. Yahoo Photos, you can actually use target.com. That's the one I used because there's a Target like practically walkable from my house. And I can actually upload my photos, tell it to send it to my local Target, and just pick them up, you know, a couple hours later. There's another neat service that ties in with Flickr, although you don't have to, and that's called Moo.com. And Moo.com, M-O-O.com, will take your Flickr photos and allow you to make these business cards. These are all... photos on these business cards.
Oh, how clever.
And then on the back you have, throw that one down there to him.
Cool.
You can put whatever information you want on the back. Mine have my email and my...
Can you use certain fonts?
You're limited. They have a certain selection you can choose from, but you can choose like a serif or a sans serif and change the colors.
Cool.
And then it will even puts my Flickr buddy, my avatar on Flickr, whatever you want it to set to, on the back. I like that because people can look at my car and go, "Oh, that's right, that was what Doug looked like." So I like that.
Wow.
And I use some computer logos for groups I'm a member of. The only one that didn't come out was a jellyfish. It was too dark.
So they're basically like half business cards?
They're about half, not quite. They're kind of an odd format. They come out of the UK, and they ship free shipping here to the States. They come in this little white box of 100. It was like, I think, $20 for 100. Mm-hmm. And I'm still using them.
And you can use different pictures.
You can pick whatever photos you want, and you could pick 100 different photos. I think I picked around 33.
Okay.
So there are three of some and four of others.
Okay.
When I ended up with my final order from them.
How do you spell it?
Moo.com. And we were at a...
How do you get a three-letter one these days?
Oh, that's tough. I don't know. It's very tough.
Either.
They probably paid for it through the nose. So actually, there's a conference that we do twice a year here in L.A. It's an unconference, actually, called Bar Camp. And we actually, one of the presentations at Bar Camp was merely us all getting together and showing off our Moo cards to show people what they are.
Do the backs always have to be the same? Are they consistent?
They're fairly consistent. You can turn fields off and on. You can change the color of the text. You can change the font type of the text, but that's about it. Although I haven't made these in a while, so they may have improved that feature. But definitely check out the site. Aren't those cute?
Yeah.
The neat thing is, everyone you give one of these to is like, Oh, cool. Where did you get those?
Yeah, I know, because it was just the old standard business card.
I got these especially for our Podcasters Expo, right before Podcast Expo, so I had something neat to give out at Podcast Expo.
Yeah.
And in that case, I did not put my phone number on it because I didn't know who I was in a meeting. Email and the website are just easier to give out in that case.
But today, not that I have it, can people, you take pictures and put it on the computer, can you do it at home, make photos at home?
I have sort of given up printing photos at home. It is expensive in both ink and paper, and it is troublesome to get them to print properly. I fought with them, you know, I finally said, pardon my French, screw this. It is too much trouble. And I started sending them to Target.com, which is basically Yahoo Photos. If you do it through Target, it's Yahoo Photos. It's the way you do it. I just started doing that. There's another one called Snapfish that my friend uses, which you can upload your pictures, and they will actually mail the photos to you. There's tons of these photo sites out there. Costco will do it. If you're a Costco member, you can actually upload them to Costco.com and go pick them up
my
at the store.
He swears by that. I haven't tried it, but he swears.
The biggest advantage... The biggest advantage you get there is when you order them printed is they come on true photographic papers in true photographic inks. They are photographs. And so therefore, their longevity should be much higher. They've made great strides in the photo safeness of inkjet prints and papers and stuff, but I still don't think you're going to really get to the quality of true photographic paper and photographic inks. I think you're probably going to be better off if you're wanting to last for a long time. Yeah, and you can also walk into Ritz and do a print there. That's another thing you can do too. Is you don't have to use your computer at all. You can walk in with your memory card, stick it in a machine, and I think you can do this at CVS. You can do this a bunch of places, CVS and others. In fact, I think you can do this at Costco. You walk in with your memory card from the camera, go poink, and it pops up all the pictures, and go, that one, 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 three of each.
And it prints out the photos.
4x5s, do it. And it prints it out right there for you. So that's the other thing you can do as well. Thanks, Daniel. He used a thumb drive, too, one of these little, you know, keychain drives, like I was showing last week.
Oh, yeah, right.
You can use these, too. Or you can use a memory drive out of your memory card out of your printer or your camera.
Camera.
I highly recommend digital. I have never.
I can borrow it, but I have a problem. I only like black and whites. I love black and white.
If you want true black and white, then what I'm saying, true black and white is not color photos that have been turned black and white.
No.
If you want true black and white, the only way to get that is to shoot 35 millimeter or higher with black and white film, which unfortunately is becoming harder and harder to find and harder and harder to develop.
Oh, jeez.
Film is going away. Film is going away.
Film is going away.
Film is going away. It's simply too expensive, and in this era of green thinking, it's simply too dangerous. Photographic developers are toxic, hazardous materials.
Okay, so when you say film is going away.
Film is going away.
So that it will all be on that?
It'll be on video. It'll be on some form of video rather than acetate or celluloid-based film.
So on the computer.
Yeah. Well, that's where all the editing is really being done. Even today for a movie, the movie is often edited on video.
Right, right.
The editor then basically prepares what's called an EDL, an edit decision list, which he gives back to the old-fashioned negative cutter with his finely honed razor blade, who then takes the film and actually cuts the film still. But that's happening less and less frequently these days.
Do you think someday, and maybe not that far away, that you will not be able to take a picture and get it developed?
No. It'll be around for a while. Nothing ever goes away completely. But it will become less and less and less. So many of even your professional photographers these days are shooting digital. It is simply so much easier, so much less expensive. Imagine a wedding photographer. You'd get, 200 proofs. They'd shoot you 200 pictures.
Right.
They'd shoot 400 pictures. They'd show you 200. You'd order X. Now they can shoot 2,000 pictures. Show you them all. And you can order which ones you want. And not one frame of actual film and silver has ever been developed. Plus, they can show you all your pictures on the computer. You don't even have to go into their studio to look at your pictures. They say, here's your URL, go check them out. Our friend Andrew, who's an actor, okay, just got his headshots.
And then when you say, I want these 50 pictures from my wedding.
Daniel says, we got all our wedding photos on DVD, and they did prints, shot all digitally.
They did prints, okay. And they, so who printed them out? Then you want prints.
They actually arranged to have the prints made, probably through some manufacturer that they have.
Okay.
Yeah, they probably have a dealership with a high-end photo printer that then they send all their business through, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
because you want to hang a picture on a wall at some point.
You'll get it printed out, but coming in, the input is going to be more and more and more frequently a digital input. The fact is the cameras are becoming so much better. I mean, with my little fairly inexpensive 5-megapixel camera, my little point-and-shoot, which I shot those photos that you were looking at there on Flickr with. Everyone else is walking around with a digital SLR with lenses and everything else. I go mainly for the creativity of it, just the act of taking time to see photos, to see compositions. So you can take them with any camera. The point is, the seeing, to me, is the most important aspect of it. So this is a 5-megapixel camera, and will print I'm sure there are photographers who will not agree with me on this, but you can take and print from one of the shots of this shot at full resolution and easily print a standard 8x10 print that will look like a photo. If you wanted to go bigger than that, you need more resolution. You need more dots. I actually sold a photo a couple years ago. Guy found it on the web. I posted it on the web, and he found it. And it happened that he had provided some fertilizing type stuff for transplanted plants for the cherry trees at Lake Balboa. And the fact is, they basically say will almost guarantee 100% survival rate of all transplants. And the fact is, the trees, I don't know if you've ever been out there during the bloom time, they're absolutely gorgeous. And I had been out to take some photos. He wanted a picture that he could print for the side of a trade show booth, 10 feet by 8 feet, something like that. And I crossed my fingers and said, let me check. That was one of the last things I ever shot on film. So I had a 35mm negative. So I was actually able to take that negative into a photo house and say, scan this at whatever resolution you need to scan it at so they can print it out 8x10 feet and still have enough, still have enough picked up. So actually 8x10 feet, you're even then beyond the grain, the ability of the grain to show it. But the fact is, if you scan it in very, 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 very finely, they gave me something like 100 or 150 megabyte file back on a CD that I was able to give them and say, send it to your printer. It's ready to go. Okay. And I call myself a dilettante in all things. I've sold a photo, I've sold paintings, I've been paid for playing music, but nothing, that's not my job in any of those fashions. But that happened totally because I happened to post some pictures on my website, and he came across them. He was looking for cherry trees Lake Balboa and happened across my photos. Now, you can't get near the place during blossom time. It's just packed because everybody knows they're there. I actually have the usual bloom time in my calendar to remind me to go out and shoot photos, but it is, everyone's kind of discovered it out there. It is absolutely gorgeous. I had been, as a child, I'd been in Washington during cherry blossom time, and remember that from my childhood. It's being so amazing. The first time I drove over the hill not expecting it, it's like the whole park looks entirely different. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Lake Balboa at the corner of Victory and Balboa.
Could you do what you just did for any site? Or did you have to set that?
You can actually, you can actually do it for any site, and I'll show you how.
Okay.
So this is 2005. I don't think, these aren't the photos I sold, but these are ones shot digitally again. Well, see, now remember, and I've talked about this in the past too, digital cameras automatically stamp a whole boatload of information into the file. It knows what exposure it was taken at, what shutter speed, the date and time it was taken, and some cameras nowadays, they'll even, with a GPS device, mark where you were when you took the photo. Or if you have a GPS, you turn them both on, and you take the information from the GPS and the photos, and you merge them in the computer later, and it will mark where you took those photos.
It tells you how you were feeling then.
Well, you know, you can do that too. So there's, you know, this is some pictures of the cherry trees.
So I wanted
to show that. Right, but that's an example of you know, what you could do with the photos. But yeah, less and less film these days. At the summer film workshop we were at in July in Columbia, Missouri, we actually shot a film, shot a 30-minute film. It wasn't on film. We shot it on video.
Right.
And it just makes it so much easier. When you figure a 35-millimeter film load, you know, those big cameras you see that they, in the old time, you had 10 minutes. You had 10 minutes of film. So you had to stop minimally every 10 minutes to change film canisters. With video, where you had an hour on a tape. You know, so you could shoot 4 hours, 4 hours before you filled a 1 hour tape. Mm-hmm. So I mean, basically it was less than 1 hour per day we were shooting. So it's almost basically one tape a day, two cameras, but very high quality digital cameras, and 24 frame per second digital cameras, which gives you a film like look, mm-hmm. because that 24 frames a second, of course, is what film goes at, where video is 30 frames a second. You'll notice most
television. Page created like in a Photoshop?
This was created. This page was created with a program called WebPix. It is a shareware program. I actually have bought it because it was so good at producing these galleries. Nowadays, I'm using Flickr more, and I don't often produce these galleries myself. But this is a Mac program that I could take a whole slew of photos, go flap, capture my photos, do whatever I want, and then say, output the files. And it would give me a folder that I could then just copy to my web server, and boom, I've got a gallery. And it did a great job. I haven't used it recently because I started using Flickr more. But yeah, usually after an event, I would do a gallery like this of all the photos I had taken during that event. You had a quick question about the search I just did. Basically, I told it to search for cherry trees in Google, but not all through Google, because Lord knows what I'd find. I'd find places all over in Japan and everywhere else. I said, only search my site. And this is a trick I've shown in the past, but basically, let me see what Daniel said here. Sony makes nice GPS device to mark photos. As I was talking about the GPS device that ties in. Anytime you're doing a Google search, you can add, there's a bunch of keywords you can add to do things. But you can come in and say, cherry trees, and the word site, colon, welchwrite.com. So basically it says, only find me pages that have the word cherry trees on them on the site called welchwrite.com. And that's how I restricted that search to just my website. Okay? Now, you can also say, well, let me see if I can remember what it is. There's another one you can say, which, you know, vanity searching is all the rage, searching for yourself. I think if I say link, welchwrite.com, it shows me all the pages out there on the internet that Google knows about that link back to welchwrite.com. And so I can see who's linking to me. Now, a lot of these pages here are interlinkages between my... why am I linked from that page? You never know. You never know. I'll have to go look it out. Check it out. Gardening podcast, bar camp. You know, so they're now we're starting to see some other people who are linking back to me. Yes. If you would like to be on my newsletter mailing list, you can easily do that. I send out a newsletter probably every 5 to 7 days. It is a couple screens full, short little items, including calendars of events that I found and other things. If you go to, I believe, right now on Technology IQ, let's see here, did I post it on Technology IQ? You may actually be able to find, I put links there, let's see. Whoops, don't want to play that. Get an echo. Yeah, second item in Technology IQ, right below our live video stream that I'm sending out right now, you will see Get My Newsletter and Find Great LA Events. You can really click on these and input your email address, and it will take you to the sign-up page for those email newsletters, and you'll receive each note that I send out, my newsletter and or the Welch events list. and say visit this group, and it'll take you right there. Well, if, yeah, welchrite.com/techIQ, the same one where this show appears.
From the first one.
Yeah. I did post it. I sometimes cross-post things across to different blogs if they are applicable. In that case, I did. I just had to make sure that I had. And then once you're a member, you can actually go back and read previous newsletters, like my last newsletter and stuff like that. It announces the internet seminars, the dates, and other events like that as well. Any other questions tonight? Well, we're actually coming down very close to the end of our time today. I like to stop a little bit early so that we have time to get out of the library before it closes. So the librarians do not see me as a pariah and make them stay late. So I want to thank you all very much for coming. I hope you had a great time. Hope you learned something.
Thank you.
Hope you've been encouraged to dip your toe in the water a little bit and check out all those neat things that are out there. There's all this and more. And go again, start doing searches on things you're interested in, where you're kind of stymied in other ways. There aren't enough books on it. There aren't enough magazines. There aren't enough other information on it. I think you'll find entire communities online that allow you to communicate and engage in whatever activity you're interested in, whether it's knitting or bicycling or soccer or, you know, whatever, anything, woodworking. And with the introduction of the easy introduction of video now, it's just exploding, because people can say, "Hey, look at this neat thing I just built," and show, you know, give you a little tour of it and show you how. And this tenon was built like this, and you know, it goes so much beyond the typical email text back and forth. So, thanks again for those of you online. This has been Technology IQ live from the library. We do this the second and fourth Thursdays of the month live here from the Sherman Oaks branch of the LA Public Library. You can find out more information by visiting our website at welchrite.com/techIQ. That's welchrite.com/techIQ. Join us again later. Bring your questions. Have a great evening. Bye, Daniel.
This show is a production of welchrite.com, WelchRite.com.